This week on the eBay for Business podcast.
Last year, UPS and eBay teamed up to provide small and medium-sized sellers with competitive shipping rates. Sellers actually will see lower UPS rates in some cases by as much as 3.5% for lighter packages that are going shorter distances.
Some people are sort of snobs about who collects what and what. I've now come to the conclusion that people who collect, I don't care what it is, if it's a tchotchke, it's a perfume, if it's modern art, are passionate about their collections. And people who are passionate have more fun in life. So I salute all of you collectors. I think it makes life so much more fun.
I'm Brian.
I'm Griffin. This is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And joining us this week for episode 137 is Brian Burke. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Griff. It's great to be here.
You've been busy this week?
It's been a really busy week.
Notice every week, that's the main theme I always ask. Hey, you've been busy? It's been a busy week.
Well, and you know, I bet if you asked every employee, they'd say that because all the stuff that's going on in our company right now, it's amazing.
It is. It is amazing. It is, considering that none of us are in the office and that the campus is a ghost town, you know, there's tumbleweeds actually moving through the campus. You can hear the wind whistle. It's very spooky.
Who are our distinguished guests this week?
First, we're going to talk eBay and UPS with Jennifer Boyd. Jennifer is the senior manager of the UPS Digital Access Program, and she's going to share details on a recent announcement about rate adjustments for eBay sellers.
Very interesting.
And then we'll visit with two longtime eBay sellers of collectibles, Bill and Maida Webster of Connectibles on eBay.
Oh, that's great. They're two great sellers.
And of course, we'll answer a few seller questions. But first, Brian, what's in the eBay news this week?
Well, our first item of news is from our seller announcement board. The post says in part, starting the week of April 20th, 2021, you will see an optional payment via escrow through our partner, escrow.com, for luxury watch listings priced at $10,000 and up. Escrow can give you greater confidence when you sell high-value items by confirming your buyer's identity. As we continue to focus on the luxury watches experience, we are increasing final value fees in the watches category. This will allow us to invest even more in luxury watch marketing, social media, SEO, and product innovation as we drive towards becoming the leading platform for luxury watches.
That's good news about escrow. No one likes to see a final value fee increase, but I think it makes sense in this case.
I think it does, and especially how much we are investing in some of these key verticals, and luxury watches being one of them.
Boy, an authentication isn't easy.
And then also in the news this week, the European Union.
Oh no, I can't wait.
Oh, indeed. So starting July 16th, 2021, CE mark products sold into the EU will require an economic operator established in the EU. Economic operators are responsible for working with authorities by providing technical information or taking certain actions for the product. An economic operator can be a manufacturer, importer, authorized representative, or a fulfillment service provider. Most larger brands of CE mark products will have an economic operator already established in the EU. You will be required to ensure the name and contact details of the EU economic operator are listed on the product or in the product packaging. This information generally accompanies new in-box items manufactured or imported for the EU market. If the products you ship to the EU don't contain this information, your goods may be stopped at customs or prevented from being delivered to your buyers. eBay is working to obtain more information as well as options for sellers who sell goods that do not have an economic operator. Please visit our Help Hub page for the latest updates.
Right, and I will put a direct link to the page on the Help Hub that references this particular issue, and it'll be in the transcript for episode 137. And also, we have one more update before we start the episode. Last week, we had Scott Kelleher with us talking about the new automated promoted listings feature.
That's right. Scott contacted us and asked us to add two bits of information that he didn't mention and that he wants to make sure sellers know. The first one is about the 50,000 listing cap alert. When you set up a new campaign, an alert appears within the tool if more than 50,000 listings qualify for that campaign. Scott says that his team is looking into providing a more dynamic alert in the future on your promoted listings dashboard.
That's a good update. The second bit of detail that Scott wanted to relay is about how the suggested ad rate works. Scott says if you opted into ad rate automation, eBay checks your ad rate every 24 hours and makes updates as needed if the suggested ad rate changes so that you don't have to. You just set it once and forget it. That's pretty important. Thank you, Scott, for clarifying those. We love the new feature, and I know sellers do too.
So up next, UPS on eBay.
Recently, eBay added UPS to the options a seller has for shipping their items. And with us now to go over the potential benefits of using UPS is Senior Manager of their Digital Access Program, Jennifer Boyd. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thanks, Griff. Glad to be here.
Why did UPS change their rates?
Well, first I'll give a little bit of background. Last year, UPS and eBay teamed up to provide small and medium-sized sellers with competitive shipping rates. Through the eBay label platform, sellers can access industry-leading delivery commitments from UPS that were once available to mostly enterprise-level shippers. Last year and earlier this year, despite pressures from record shipping volumes, UPS refrained from rate increases in order to support sellers shipping via eBay. Now we are applying a modest rate adjustment compared to other shipping carriers as we look to continue helping eBay seller businesses.
So let's get into the details. What can you tell us about the rate adjustments?
As of April 11th, eBay sellers see the adjusted UPS rates within the eBay label flow. I want to be sure to call out that it's not a general rate increase, but it's really a strategic rate adjustment. Sellers actually will see lower UPS rates in some cases by as much as 3.5% for lighter packages that are going shorter distances, while some sellers will see increases up to 5%, and this is more in the heavier packages going further distances. Compared to our UPS daily rates, discounts now for UPS ground service is up to 50% off. And for UPS second day air shipments, it's up to 66% off.
Can you give us some examples of shipping scenarios for which an eBay seller like me might benefit from these rate adjustments?
As mentioned, we improved our price position for UPS ground. Specifically, the lighter short zone cells are more competitive versus the USPS rates. Just to clarify, when I say short zone, what I mean is destinations that are closer to you. If you're in San Jose, we really encourage you and other sellers to look at their shipments that are maybe typically going through the USPS to compare the rates and the services and see if there's some benefits for you here. Even 1 and 2 pound packages, again, are encouraged to do some comparisons. Let me give you some specific examples. LA to San Bernardino is a short zone movement. A 10-pound package going that distance is $9.76, which is less than the USPS priority mail commercial base rate. Another example for a lighter weight package is from Atlanta to Miami. This is still fairly short distance. We call it a zone 3. Atlanta to Miami for 2 pounds would be $8.40, slightly more than the USPS priority mail commercial base, but worth looking at the UPS service and making a decision on if UPS is a good value for your movement.
Sure, yes, of course.
Yeah. And one more, a Chicago to Atlanta, that's what we call a zone 4. So if we look at a 7-pound package, $10.08 would be how much that movement would take.
How can sellers make sure that they have access to these special UPS adjusted rates during the listing process?
First, if you're purchasing your label from eBay through the eBay labels, you'll be able to see the discount at the point of purchase or within the eBay label flow. You will not see the same price by going directly to the counter at UPS's retail locations and purchasing there. One tip, in case you don't have access to a printer, you can purchase a label from eBay as a QR code and have the UPS store associate print the label for you from that QR code. This way, you can still get the advantage of the UPS eBay pricing.
It's hard to believe, but we actually do have sellers who may not have access to a printer, so this is a great feature for them. When I'm getting the discount, I know I have the option of keeping it or passing it along. So how do I pass along a shipping discount to the buyer? That's what I like to do. I like to give them the discount. Some sellers like to keep it.
Within my eBay, under the shipping preferences or the managed shipping settings, there's an option called Offer Carrier Specific Discounts to Buyer. And you can edit that or set your preference to show the UPS eBay rates.
There's a link to that, and I'll put that in our transcript.
Okay, great. So with this setting, if sellers are using calculated rates in their listings, the buyer will see shipping fees that match the UPS rates within the eBay label flow.
What is the UPS network?
When we talk about the UPS network, as an eBay seller, when you are thinking about shipping, you're thinking about not only how much your shipping cost is and whether or not you pass that on to the buyer or you incorporate it in the cost of your item, but you're also thinking about what are the options to get your package to the carrier? Maybe when will your shipment arrive? How reliable is the shipping service? And will it arrive when you expect it to?
Yeah, that's very important.
Especially on eBay, sellers and eBay want to know, is the tracking information updated timely?
Yeah, and it's not just sellers, it's buyers too. They're constantly checking that tracking.
Right. So I'll share a few of our latest advancements. First, UPS is now delivering in 3 days or less to 90% of the U.S. population. Our Fastest Ground Ever initiative saves an entire day on many shipments that cover America's most traveled shipping lanes. Second, UPS has expanded our weekend operations. The UPS improvements to weekend services applies both at the origin or the seller and the destination buyer. So for sellers with orders late on Friday and early on Saturday, you can get those orders to a UPS access point location within the 48 contiguous states on Saturday, and they'll begin their journey to a happy buyer. On the delivery side, residential deliveries are made in more than 100 metropolitan areas across the U.S. on Saturday at no additional cost for ground packages. There's more details on our weekend operations at ups.com if sellers want to dig into any of the specifics on the Saturday and the weekend operations.
Yes, and of course, if you're a seller considering using UPS for your eBay shipments, it pays to understand the service. So we do encourage you, we should have mentioned it right at the top, you should visit ups.com to find out how their delivery services work specifically for you in your area. You mentioned convenience. Sellers love that. How do sellers actually get their parcels into the hands of a UPS carrier?
So at this point, UPS scheduled pickup is not available through eBay labels. However, there are 85,000 plus locations available to all sellers, and this includes Saturday pickup from those locations. While people are running errands, they can drop off at the UPS store locations, as well as our partner locations like Michael's, CVS, Advanced Auto Parts, and thousands of independent retail locations. Also, UPS drop boxes are available 24/7.
And you can find the location of a UPS drop box at the UPS website.
Correct. There's a link within the eBay labels flow to the locator on ups.com, or you can go to ups.com/drop-off, put in your zip code, and find the locations that are close to you.
So I got to tell you, when I heard CVS, CVS is one block away from me. So I can walk to CVS and drop my parcels off. And that's really convenient.
Yeah. Even in rural locations, UPS may be closer than a seller might think, such as an independent retailer in town. 92% of the U.S. population is within 5 miles of a location that accepts UPS packages.
Well, that's great news because, as I said, we do have a lot of sellers located in rural areas, and it's a great way of life. But sometimes when it comes to the efficiency and convenience of mail services, it's not so great. In fact, USPS sometimes won't even come and pick up at some of these locations, so they have to drive. Knowing that in your local town, there's probably going to be a store that where you can drop it off is pretty cool.
Griff, I'd also like to share that when a package is dropped off or given to a UPS driver, the barcode is scanned. That acceptance scan information is immediately available within UPS tracking information.
And this is at any of the partners within the network?
Correct. So eBay and the buyers see their orders tendered and on its way via UPS.
Does UPS have special requirements or tips regarding things like packing materials and just packing in general?
The UPS store sells packaging materials and provides packing services. However, sellers can use other boxes and packaging as well. I will provide a few tips for our listeners. Sellers want to ensure that their package, of course, arrives safely. So use a rigid box with flaps intact, wrap your items separately, use adequate cushioning, and use strong tape that is designed for shipping. You can find more details again on ups.com for packaging guidelines. I'd also like to call out, if you are reusing a box, be sure to remove any old labels, hazardous material indicators, and other previous shipment markings on the box that are no longer applicable. I'd also to remind sellers when completing shipping with eBay, it's important to ensure that they input the proper package dimensions and weights in order to avoid billing adjustments and surprise charges after the package has been shipped.
Now, Jennifer, you mentioned hazardous materials, and that begs a question. When it comes to shipping hazardous materials and things like regulated goods through UPS, are there some points that every seller should keep in mind?
If you're shipping lithium batteries or any other regulated items, you need to make sure the item is eligible to be shipped via UPS. And if it is eligible, that the sellers follow the requirements. If you tender shipments that don't follow the guidelines, the package can be stopped en route, causing issues for you and your buyer. Violations may result in fees, fines, and possible suspension from shipping UPS. So it's a very important topic we're looking to educate eBay sellers about. And if you are unsure, please visit ups.com and make sure that you know that you're in compliance with any items that you have questions about.
Yeah, luckily, most of our sellers don't sell hazardous goods. I think it's really hard to find antiques and collectibles as hazardous, so I think they'll be fine. Jennifer, sellers are always concerned about a carrier's claim process for items lost or damaged in transit. How does the UPS claim process work?
UPS offers coverage for lost and damaged packages. When you're printing a shipping label from the eBay flow, sellers can declare the value up to $999. Again, that's against loss or damage. Then, in the event of a damage, UPS may issue a damage call tag and pick up the package for investigation. Sellers can find step-by-step guidance for filing the claim on the eBay help page under shipping insurance. And there is a custom process that we've put in place for eBay sellers. So we would ask if there is a loss or damage situation that sellers refer to the process on the eBay page.
And again, as we always do, I'll put the link directly to the help page for shipping insurance in our transcript. And this will be transcript for episode 137. And I'd also like to mention that because we talked about a lot of different topics here, there'll be links in there for how you can look up packaging matters. That's another page on eBay. And also shipping best practices on eBay.com in Seller Center. And you can see a summary of UPS services at eBay.com shipping. And again, I always put the links to here because people are listening and if they're in their car or if they're listening and they don't stop and write down links anyway. And it just makes for boring radio. So we'll put all of those links in the transcript for episode 137. Jennifer, I thank you so much for stopping by. It's been great talking to you, and we've learned a lot today about UPS.
Thanks, Griff. I appreciate the time with you today and to share some information with the seller community about UPS.
We've been speaking with Jennifer Boyd. She's the Senior Manager of UPS Digital Access Program about UPS and their recent addition to the eBay Shipping Labels Program and about their recent rate adjustment. Many of our listeners sell different types of items. There are different types of inventory for each type of seller. But there is a common thread about sellers and eBay, and that's eBay's special place in history of the last 20 years when it comes to the collectibles market. In the last year with the pandemic, that market has grown in interest as new people have found eBay and decided that they want to start collecting. I thought this might be a good time to revisit two old friends of ours we actually haven't spoken to since the old eBay radio days. Bill and Maida Webster, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
When it comes to your business, and by the way, the user ID is Connectibles, how has Connectibles been impacted by the last year?
I think the biggest way has been the way we've been sourcing, because we sell nearly all one of a kind, meaning we only find it once, unique vintage antiques and collectibles. And to do that, we used to go to a lot of live local auctions as well as tag sales, but I don't like getting up early in the morning, so that was never my thing. But we used to go to a lot of local auctions. And obviously, as soon as COVID hit, we are seniors, we're very high risk. We were going nowhere. But the most beautiful thing, which I cannot recommend enough, and is what got us through the year, there are local groups that sell online, but you have local pickup in Connecticut. We're in Connecticut, and they are all around the country. And every week there would be at least one or two a day where we could sign on, look at 200-300 items, bid in my pajamas. They would assign a day where you could go and pick it up safely, COVID safe, outdoors, no contact. We did not miss a week of sourcing new, wonderful material. And I can't think of another job that you could be staying home and have items come to you. Every once in a while, one of those auctions would do shipping only. Then we had to be careful about thinking about weight and size of what we were bidding on. But we have not missed a beat in every week bringing new exciting collectible inventory because there seems to have been no shortage during COVID of people going through their house and taking time to clean out collectibles.
Bill, has there been any particular item that you've purchased in this fashion in the last year that really sticks in your mind as being unusual or high value?
There's a couple things, actually. Let me just piggyback on what Maida just said. It got me into a business that I hadn't been specializing in much, buying electric trains, vintage electric trains, and reselling them. At local flea markets and stuff, we would never really see those. But on the auctions, I found a tremendous source for electric trains, and it's been very helpful to me in trying to specialize in that. So that's an item that I've gotten now that I wasn't really selling much of in the past. Unfortunately, there's a downside to that. Kids aren't playing with electric trains anymore, so it's older people that are just building their collections, and I assume that business will fall off one of these days soon. Kids play with their iPads instead.
Don't you think, though, that kids will get tired of playing with their iPads and that there's the possibility they may suddenly discover these ancient old tools from hundreds of years ago, like vintage trains? And
well, you might have a point there because the one things that fathers always leave their children are their electric trains. Now, most of them end up in tag sales and on auction lines, but hopefully some kids will start playing with them and bring that business back to life again.
The other thing that has changed was our shipping. Bill used to go every day and love going to the post office and schmoozing with his favorite postman. We started right at COVID having daily pickup, and we bought all kinds of snacks and candy bars. And every day we would leave a treat, you know, for the last 12 months for our local pickup postman. So that was a huge change. Now that we're double vaccinated, he's back to going and schmoozing with his favorite postman. So we're not doing pickup anymore.
It's funny. They always seem to be interested in what I'm shipping. So each day I usually have a story to tell about something I'm shipping.
I'm hoping that there's not a long line of people behind you at the post office saying, geez, Guy, can you just hurry up?
Who cares about your line of trains? Enough already.
No, it's a very small regional post office, and it's not very busy at all.
But those two things were the biggest switches for us, not being able to go live to source inventory. And it turned out to be an absolute blessing. This could not have been easier. The amount of inventory, we had to stop ourselves some weeks from buying. Now you're actually bidding, buying, paying, and still having plenty of room for resale on eBay. And I don't know when we'll ever end up going back and not using this.
It certainly is cost effective. If you think about not having to put gas in the car and your time and driving to a place and sitting around waiting at an auction, it's a lot easier just to sit at home. Do you think you'll continue buying this way in the future?
Absolutely. Last night, one of my high school senior granddaughters fell in love with a pair of vintage 1970s go-go boots that I showed her in a local auction that we're going to pick up on Sunday, 3 blocks from here. We bought them for $19. She thinks they're worth $200. She's thrilled. And anybody can do this. And these companies are all around the country. And you can be bedridden. You can just be lazy. We were able to keep our eBay business exactly the same because of this sourcing, which is pretty extraordinary.
Were there any in the last year purchasing this way downsides? Did you bid on something and then find it wasn't what you thought it was?
There was one set of picture, a round wooden board with marbles that you play a game of solitaire where the middle, you have to keep jumping them. And we looked at one and it looked beautiful, but we thought it was about 12 inches. But it just looked like something that was interesting. And each marble was made out of a polished stone. And I'm a sucker for that. So we bought it and went and picked it up. And it was almost 3 feet across with these stunning giant malachite balls. And it's now a centerpiece on my cocktail table. And my mouth dropped when we saw it because they used the word marbles. And so I just assumed it was a marble, but it's not. It's like billiard ball size. So
billiard ball size? A malachite? Those are worth money.
Yes, it's beautiful. And the obvious other downside is if the company who happens to be selling doesn't give you good condition, you can always ask questions, but you're taking a risk. We have not been burned by this.
So people, local people, they give the items to this local online?
No, it would be like when you're ready to move. You hire this company who comes in, but unlike a real tax sale where people come into your house, this company comes in, you give them your 100 items, they do all the photography, they make a week auction under their umbrella site of estate auctions online. They put up 100 listings of the things that are in your house. They handle everything. So the owner, whoever it is whose items these are, who's downsizing, does nothing. They run this online auction for a week. At the end of the week, the high bidder wins each item. And then they give a 3-hour window on that Saturday where you come and pick it up outside COVID safe. So you can sit at your computer. And if you wanted perfume, for example, which I don't think you need more of, but if you wanted perfume, there are, like right now, 14 auctions running this week here where we are in Connecticut. I would just type perfume in the search bar and it would show me any one of these 14 auctions that has any perfume going and I could go in and bid. But what's crazy is there's still room for resale. Now, last night, Bill participated in a train auction and there ended up with no room for resale. These were real collectors, you know, just like going to a regular auction like you used to. He didn't win anything. But for every other week, we haven't had a week go by where we haven't added 30, 40, 50 things to our inventory. And what's nice about it is they're collections. And on eBay, I love getting collections where you can link one auction to another auction.
You're famous for a very famous collection, you two.
We are.
How's that collection going? Tell us about it.
You want to do it, Bill?
No, go ahead.
We were very fortunate enough to be friendly with Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz's daughter, Lucy Arnaz Luckinville. And it's probably 10 years ago when they decided to downsize and move. She hired us because she trusted us and knew that the I Love Lucy fans were going to be on eBay with very, very deep pockets. And we ran two auctions, one in 2011, one in 2013, of all of her personal Lucy memorabilia. And then they moved to the West Coast. So the prize items, the amazing items, all sold at 10 times we pictured anything would go. The eBay platform for this was perfect. It brought in a lot of young, avid I Love Lucy fans. But we still have probably 80 to 100 items out of the 400 or 500 that we started with. And they're interesting. They're wonderful. You can find them on LucyDesiSale.com, which brings you to our eBay store special page with an interview with her. She did not have a good experience with one of the prime fancy schmancy New York auction houses and so called me up and said, I trust you and what do you think? And I said, eBay is the place for this because it's international sales. And it was amazing. And we still, if we could get more things, it would just, we're always getting questions for things. But each thing we have comes with a certificate of authenticity. And it's brought a lot of interesting people to eBay that weren't there before. But of course, Bill's right. Depending on what you're selling, the age of the potential collectors is changing. When we first started, 1950s and 1960s dolls were the dolls that the buyers wanted when they were kids and their parents wouldn't buy for them. And now you can see it's my kids, the 1970s and 80s toys that I said, no, I'm not buying you that. It's too expensive. And my son now says, it only was $6. What do you mean you didn't let me have it then?
That was the 1960s money.
Yes, yes. People keep changing what's in vogue. And mostly people wanting things from their childhood.
Bill, have you seen a change in what you've been buying over the last couple of years based on what collectors are looking for? Are there things that you've abandoned and new lines that you've taken up?
I really haven't abandoned much, but I have taken up new stuff. I do dabble in the electronics now more than I used to. But one item that we've sort of specialized in over the last few years is featherweight sewing machines. We've sold about 18 of them in the last few years, and the margins on those are incredible. We typically buy them in the $200 to $300 range and sell them in the $800 to $1,200 range. Quilting in the Midwest, I think, will last forever. And those machines, most of them are built in the 30s and the 40s, and they're still selling. They're very lightweight, portable, and you can take them to your quilting bead.
When you say, what was the term you used?
Well, they're called featherweight.
Featherweight.
They're called featherweight.
How big are they normally?
They're about 12 inches wide, about 10 inches this way, and about 12 inches tall. In a nice little carrying case with a handle.
They're heavy. I mean, they really aren't featherweight. They're heavy, but they're portable.
Very portable.
Singer featherweight sewing machines. Last night, we sold for $800 some people call it white, some people call it pale green. That was the first time we've had that color. Most of them are black. They have different medallions. there is an enormous community of people who want these featherweights. We grab them whenever we can. We just looked it up yesterday and we've sold 18 of them. You know, they're substantial and heavy to ship, but there's a huge community. So one of the things we did over COVID was somebody was selling an enormous sewing collection and they had the featherweight, but they also had thimbles and scissors and fabric.
And about 10 attachments, buttonholers, those kind of things.
Oh, sure, yes.
Zigzag.
And then there's all kinds of websites that when you look at the number on the bottom, tells you exactly what day in 1930 it was made and in what factory. It's an enormous field. So if any of you come across featherweights, the foot pedal is Bakelite. They're just classic and beautiful.
Be on the lookout, Bolo.
Be on the lookout for Singer featherweights.
If you had to give advice to somebody who wants to sell collectibles and they're just starting off, say it's a younger person, with your experience both before and during eBay for selling collectibles, what would be your first bit of advice?
I think start with things you might have in the house, whether it's jewelry or clothing or pottery, and just don't be afraid to get your feet wet. Obviously, if you haven't shipped, clothing and jewelry is easier than cut glass pottery, but start easy. The other phrase would be, you make your money when you buy. You don't make your money when you sell. So the price that you pay really determines how much money you're going to likely end up with. My mantras are, if I think it's interesting, somebody else might. You make your money when you buy. And if you like it, grab it because you'll never see it again. No regrets. It's not the most popular way of selling on eBay because you can't buy 15 of one item and just click it off, which makes it much easier. But it's the most interesting because the research is so fascinating. I get lost in the research. The other piece of advice would be as two seniors who this is our second
career.
Wait a minute,
you're seniors? I didn't know this.
Oh, don't tell. There are very few things at this stage in our lives that we find profitable, interesting. Keep your mind clever, that as a couple, we can enjoy doing this together, a shared vision, keeping us busy every day through a pandemic. I'm a retired social worker and marriage counselor, and Bill's a retired IT person, but this has been what we've done for 18 years. And I can't think of another job that would have been as much fun and financially profitable and fascinating that would have gotten us through what 2020 has been. We're very grateful.
Hopefully 2021 and beyond will be better. I find it interesting that both of your previous careers, I'm certain those skills carry over into what you do with your eBay business.
Oh, there's no question. Well, the way we named our store Connectibles, which is Connectibles, was I was trying to name the store and I was running a contest with my friends and family. And one day I said, you know, I view this almost as my marriage counseling, like I'm connecting people with the collectible that they want. It's like a matchmaking service. I'm connecting them with a collectible. And suddenly I went, oh my God, Connectibles. And that's how the name was born. And only later did we realize, and we live in Connecticut. So that just was the icing on the cake.
Who would have ever guessed? We'll put the link to your eBay store in our transcript for episode 137. So you can check out the, you have how many thousand items up right now?
Well, we have 1,900 running, but we've sold 19,000. So when we're horrified at the number, when I get horrified, Bill says, but that means 9 out of 10 things we have posted have sold.
Exactly.
But it looks like, oh my God, we've made such terrible decisions on these 1,900 things, but we've sold 19,000.
I hate to interrupt her, but as the accountant in this business, I have personally shipped 22,000 items.
Okay.
Not 19,000.
Okay.
Correction understood.
It sounds like, how did you get all those things? But then you're thinking of every 10 things we've bought to put up, 9 have sold. I don't think Bloomingdale's does better than that. So I think we're good.
I think you're going to do fine. How many items do you end up keeping? It sounds like you're keeping that big marble game.
I'm keeping that big malachite game. Yes, that we're keeping. We hardly keep anything because we've downsized and we're in a smaller place. And so, no, we don't purposely keep anything. And then every once in a while, if I keep something, I sell something else to. We have very limited room.
Yeah.
Some people are sort of snobs about who collects what and what. You know, my mother in the 50s would turn up her nose at some of the overseas things. So when I would come across them, little tchotchkes, we would call them. My immediate reaction was, you know, I've now sitting here come to the conclusion that people who collect anything, I don't care what it is, if it's a tchotchke, it's a perfume, if it's modern art, people who collect anything are passionate about their collections. And people who are passionate have more fun in life. And so what I love collectors, not based on what they're collecting, based on their interest in just learning. And so I salute all of you collectors. I think it makes life so much more fun.
I couldn't agree more.
I know you do.
Bill and Maida Webster, I want to thank you so much. We'll check in on you on a more regular basis here on the podcast, if you're okay with that.
Absolutely. And you take care of yourself.
Bill and Maida Webster have been selling on eBay for how long?
I joined in 1998, believe it or not.
All right.
We started selling in 2003.
So going on your 20th year selling on eBay. And you can find them on eBay under Connectables. We'll put the link to their store in the transcript for this episode.
It's time for You Got Questions?
We Got Answers.
The Answer Guy.
Yeah, you could say that.
So what's our first question this week, Griff?
Our first question was sent to podcast@ebay.com by eBay seller Caleb, who asks, "Hello, and thank you for the work you do, keeping sellers informed and making eBay a fun and friendly community to be a part of. Is there a way for sellers to see their older sales data from beyond 90 days ago in the paid and ship section? We're trying to analyze our previous sales metrics, but can't find any old data. Do we just need to download reports in CSV format monthly and archive them on our own servers, or am I missing something on eBay? Thank you, Caleb," whose user ID I believe is BC Reselling LLC.
Well, thanks, Caleb. You can access some sales data past 90 days, but how you access it and what you can access it depends on how long eBay has been managing your payments. First, as you already know, you can download past orders up to 90 days prior, but not beyond that. So downloading a report every month or every quarter is one way. But if you're like me, and you tend to forget deadlines, you will have to set up alarm reminders in your calendar or email app or on your phone.
Yeah, same here. I try to do that, but I do have to set a reminder. I forget. And Caleb, another option is to access a transaction report in the Payments tab in Seller Hub. Now, I just tested this one and discovered that I can print out a report that includes data all the way back to January of 2020. So you could use that feature to download the entire transaction history for the previous year. That might be helpful.
Wow, that's something I just learned. And if you move to payments sometime in 2020 or even 2021, you can always download a similar transaction report from PayPal.
Yeah, and we should point out that one huge advantage that all of these three options share, and Caleb knows this, is that the data in all three of them is formatted as a CSV or comma separated value file, which is readable in any spreadsheet app. Now, I know, because I've heard from some of you, that some sellers are not comfortable with spreadsheets, but when it comes to the ability to massage data, like, for example, summing totals for sales tax columns and gross amounts, this is much easier to do with spreadsheets than with PDFs, because quite frankly, you can't do it with a PDF.
Even just a fundamental comfort with a spreadsheet, whether it's Google Sheets or Excel, is really important. Makes things much easier.
We should do a little tutorial, video tutorial, when we're back in the video studios.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Another reason to get back in the studio.
That's right. In my hazmat suit. Our next question was sent to podcast@ebay.com by eBay seller Justin, who writes, "Hello, Griff, Rebecca, and Brian." You see how he got us all three in there? Thank you very much, Justin. "And thank you so much," says Justin, "for the weekly podcast and all the informative information that you give to us sellers. My question and suggestion is involving feedback. Has eBay ever thought about changing feedback up at all?" Well, we have changed it over the years, but let's see what else he has to say. "Here's my suggestion. It certainly seems like most upset buyers are more likely to leave negative feedback, where it seems like more than half of the customers simply do not leave any feedback at all. Would it be possible to have positive feedback left after a certain amount of time of the item being delivered?" I guess he means automatically. "Just to give a better idea of what business you're doing when customers see your feedback, when we look at our amount of transactions versus our amount of actual feedback left, it's barely 30%. Just an idea or thought. Thank you, Justin from Smithfield, Utah." Well, thanks, Justin. Now, I'm tempted to answer this, but Brian, you've been intimately involved with feedback, if I may say so, for the last 20 years now. So what would you say to Justin?
Well, I'd prefer to just punt this to the team that's currently working on feedback.
Well, you can't do that. They're not on the podcast right now.
So I would first say thanks, Justin, for the question. And then I have 3 points to make in the way of a response. First, don't assume that because someone doesn't leave feedback, they had a positive experience. From research, we know that many buyers who've had a less than positive experience suffer in silence, so to speak. Second, eBay would never leave feedback for a seller. We aren't the buyer and we cannot act as their proxy, making assumptions, etc. And third, it's the quality, not necessarily the quantity of your feedback that really counts.
Those are good points. I would add 2 more things to Brian's point, Justin. Sellers who leave feedback for buyers first tend to have a higher rate of left feedback from buyers. If you aren't leaving feedback for your buyers first, try doing so and see if that raises the percentage of buyers who leave you feedback. And finally, and I've said this before on the podcast, don't spend a lot of time worrying about your feedback. If 99% of your left feedback indicates happy buyers, then you can safely assume you are doing the right things and you're making buyers happy. Don't sweat it.
I concur 100% with that last statement.
Thanks.
Justin raises a good point, and we know that historically over time, the percentage of feedback left for a transaction has gone down, but it's been pretty consistent across the board. Your competitors are in the same boat. And remember that the goal of the feedback was really around what was the buyer's experience. And so as Griff mentioned, we can't really represent that for the buyer. The buyer has to be the one typing those words in. I do think Justin raises a good point around kind of credit for transactions. And I think that's a little bit different. And it's something I think that the feedback team, I know they're aware of it. And I don't know any plans to make any changes or anything, but it's something that does come up periodically.
Cool. Kind of like the old McDonald's things, over, you know, 1 billion served, where we actually have a number that says over 10,000 transactions completed on eBay.
So hopefully. Our next question was sent to podcast@ebay.com from eBay seller Gail, who writes, "Hi, Griffin Company. Gail forgot Brian and Rebecca." I'm joking, Gail. "I find the podcast to be very informative, and I look forward to Tuesdays for the latest episode. I love the send offers features and start every day with a cup of coffee and sending out my offers. Both rev me up and kickstart the selling day. I have a question regarding counteroffers submitted by buyers when using this feature. Is there a way to see at what price I offered? I only see their counteroffered price. I offer several rates of discount, anywhere from 15 to 50%. I would not want to counter with a price higher than my original offer. I also agree the thermal printers are the way to go. I love my Rollo printer." You are converting people, Griff.
Thank you.
"Anyway, the eBay shipping supply store would consider offering rolls of 4x6 logoed eBay address labels. What an easy way to promote a professional look. Thanks for your time, Gail Richardson, also known as the Grand Poobah of the Galleria 123.
Well, thanks for the question, Gail, or should I say Grand Poobah of the Gallery 123. I don't believe that best offer amounts are saved or recorded for viewing by the seller or checking after the offer's been sent. I tested this and I couldn't find where they would be. That would be a good feature for consideration for the team, but in the meantime, That would be a good feature for consideration for the team, but in the meantime, you could add a note to each of the listings that you make offers for with the information like the best offer discount you sent, maybe say it's like 10%, or if it was a dollar amount, that actual dollar amount, what it was, so that you have it noted for that item. But I think that's the only way you can do that for now. As for the labels, I don't believe what you're suggesting would be really possible. Though I know we used to have a co-branded labels with USPS years ago. Do you remember those, Brian? Yeah, that was a long time ago. It was a tiny little eBay logo that printed in black and white on the very top of the label, as I recall. Now, whether or not that would be possible today, I can't say. But a pre-printed thermal label would be expensive to produce. And think about it. Where would the logo go? It could, depending on the from and the to address, actually overlap printed text or even worse, barcodes. And that could present all types of problems. So, yeah, I don't see that happening. Sorry.
Yeah, although the one thing I would suggest is she can always buy eBay stickers from the eBay shipping supply store and put those on your packages.
Ooh, now that's an excellent suggestion, Brian. In fact, eBay stickers on the outside of a shipped parcel are a lot more effective than a tiny 6x4 label could ever be. Anyway, Gail, thanks for the question, and keep an eye out for an eBay for Business podcast mug heading your way this week.
I should have also suggested eBay tape.
Oh, yeah, eBay tape works well.
So do you want an official eBay for Business podcast mug? You have one, I think.
I have a whole box of them.
All you have to do is email Griff. No, I'm kidding. All you have to do is send us your question. You can call it in at 888-723-4630.
That is 888-723-4630.
And if you're not a call on the phone person, you can email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
And if we use your call-in or your email question, we'll send you, while they last, while supplies last, a gorgeous, chic, and enviable eBay for Business podcast mug suitable for any beverage of your choice.
I think Gail's going to put coffee in hers. Do you think that our listeners actually imbibe while they listen?
I don't see how some of them could make it through some weeks of our show without imbibing.
We should post a photo of our official eBay for Business podcast mug on the transcript. And you know what? I have a photo of it.
Oh, that's a great idea. That might be all the incentive one needs to call in with a question.
Or email one in.
Yes, or email one in.
Or post it on the podcast blog page at community@ebay.com.
We'll accept questions posted there. Great point. Any way you do it, you'll get a mug until I get rid of these two boxes of mugs sitting in my garage. Now, don't forget your daily podcast to-do list.
Don't walk around with your head in a fog. Be a smarty and check the announcement board for up-to-date seller news.
Do you know what would look great next to an eBay for Business podcast mug?
Don't say it. Please, please, please don't say it.
A thermal printer, Brian. What a pair they'd make.
Check out the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to see the links we reference during the episodes.
On our next episode, we'll dive into the new coded coupon feature, and Kirsty Dunn will be here with news of the latest sweepstakes winners and some of the best entries. And I was searching, Brian, through our unused content for the past 2 years. I found a great interview we recorded at 2019 eBay Open in Las Vegas, and it was with seller Daniel Gallagher, who sells, wait for it.
Oh no, here we go. Don't tell me. Thermal printers.
Bingo. So we're going to play that. You're going to want to listen to it.
I think we should call Daniel and have him come on live again.
Well, I was thinking of doing that too.
You know, we can do an update. We'd like to again thank our guests this week, Jennifer Boyd from UPS and eBay sellers Bill and Maida Webster of Connectables.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.